You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And I know you're extra excited for this episode because you know if I bring back a repeat guest, it is somebody that you love the first time. So we've got the one and only Aaron Chapman again, who's not just mortgages and investment, but he is all things numbers. You're going to get educated on this episode, and you're ideally going to be thinking a lot. So enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. Good morning. How you doing?
Not bad. How's things been with you?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Running for Congress. So I've got a lot of work on my plate right now.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that whole thing, everybody keeps talking about the threat to democracy. Yeah, it's a threat to you wanting a democracy is what it is. It's a threat to what you guys are trying to create and convince us that it is. It's not a threat to the fact that we have a republic.
No, they don't understand the republic. They don't want to. So it's the same talking points from 2016. It's a little tiresome.
Yeah, I get frustrated when they love to use that term. They love to use it because they're trying to convince us all that that's what we are when we really are not.
So why do you have that ugly steel hat on? Did we not discuss this last time that you should
have my steel cup?
Gosh, two of them? Oh, this is dreadful.
Let's think about this for a second. There's some semantics there that's actually to a person's benefit. A steel lady sounds a little bit better than a husky lady.
Okay, I can't argue with that. You win.
That's it. I'm actually helping you just a little tiny bit.
You are absolutely helping me more than you realize. So tell me what's happening in mortgage world. And by the way, guests and friends, there was an earlier episode with Aaron. So if you need to know more of the history of Aaron Chapman, you can go find that previous episode, which we have linked right over here. But in the meantime, we are recording this in January of 2024, and the first time we've had a presidential year after COVID. So let's talk about what you're seeing on the mortgage side.
Mortgage side, the most interesting thing about the mortgage side is how many people are still kind of sitting and waiting for rates to go down. It's insanity. We got lucky from October till mid-December for them to sharply drop compared to what they were, but we didn't make up a shit ton of ground when you think about it on a big scale. And they're thinking that, man, it's got to get back down into those fives. We have nothing that's going to take us there unless the federal government starts doing more quantitative easing. And the other thing I like to tell people is like, if you're waiting for the interest rates to go down, let's say Aaron Chapman's completely freaking wrong. We'll show some chart in here to show why I believe I'm 1,000% right. If Aaron Chapman's wrong and the rates go down and you held out and you got that great rate, what did you pay for the house? We have seen what happens to the price of things when the cost of money gets cheap. It was amazing to me how much people will shop and beat on us lenders for an eighth of a point or a quarter of a point, but they will say nothing and not a single peep about the realtor that just told them, hey, you want to make an offer on this house? Come in 30 to 50,000 over list just to get them to look at it. And then willingly pay $100,000 over the value of the home. So in reality, that great rate you thought you got was completely vaporized by the cost of what you spent the money on. So it's one of these situations where I tell people, you want to lock in the price now, and I don't think the interest rates are getting any better, but if the rates do get better, you can always refinance, which I think is asinine to even refinance, but you refinance the rate, you can. And it's like Warren Buffett says, 30-year fixed is the greatest financial instrument in history because it's a one-way bet, right? If you lock it and the rates go down, you can always just refi. If you locked it and the rates go up, which I think they're going to continue to do, then you basically protect yourself from all these potential losses. So right now, there's too many people thinking the Fed's going to lower. I think they're going to stay. I think they should stay if they don't want us to have what's referred to as a crash up. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have not, but carry on.
So a crash up is kind of what we described. If everything gets too cheap, everything becomes very expensive. So the cost of housing goes up. The cost of other goods and services go up. You'll have the stock market punch over 40,000, all these things. What does that do to the average guy? The average guy, everything becomes more costly for the average person. It's not like wages are going up that fast. But the rich people who have everything already, who bought into this stuff, all their values go through the roof. That gap continues to widen between the haves and the have-nots. That's what your crash up is. Everything became more valuable because you don't own any of it or you're waiting for it to get cheaper to buy it. You lost your opportunity. So the other thing we are also looking at in the market, this statistic was just shot out in the last couple of days. I was scrolling through some stuff on social and a few other places, so it could be wrong, but I think it's pretty damn accurate. It was stated that 44% of the single families that were sold this last year was to hedge funds. There's also a statement out there that the hedge funds, your BlackRocks, your State Streets, your Vanguards are looking to control 60+% of the available single family housing by 2030 to 2035. And Jeff Bezos just started one. So you have a hedge fund that started up by Jeff Bezos, the owner of, or the founder of Amazon. So what does that tell us? And what does it tell everybody? This is, again, an opinion part of this, is that single family housing will be the most valuable per square foot real estate on the planet, because they are trying to take it and turn us into a subscription-based economy. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not worried about us so much. I'm worried about my children and my grandchildren.
Exactly.
So what I'm doing right now as a real estate investor is I am purchasing properties with my family trust. I use my infinite banking strategy. We pay cash for the house. I basically have been able to put a lien on the house from that. I take that lien and then I refinance it with a rate and term instead of doing a cash out refinance. So I don't have to wait this period to get my money back out. It also makes it just kind of a little bit cheaper because you're doing a rate and terms rather than a cash out. If you pay cash, you can always just do a quick cash out. There is no seasoning, guys. If you're worried about that, somebody tells you you have to season it when you pay cash, you don't. Just call me before you pay cash so I can set you up. You have to structure it right, especially if you're going to rehab it. But let's get back to the story. So I'm buying these houses, right? And I'm having my kids sign a lease on the homes enough to pay the mortgage. So then when I refinance, I get my money back and I do it again and again and again. Actually, my own personal residence, the office I'm sitting in right now, it's in the trust and I sign a lease to the trust. I don't own it. I lease it from the trust. Everything I have belongs elsewhere. I am just signing a lease to have the rights to use it. So somebody might be poking holes in this and feel free to poke holes in it. I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm figuring this shit out as I go.
So that means you don't have the mortgage interest deduction on your personal house, but are there other tax benefits to being in the trust?
Everything's going. I also have S-corps and all kinds of other stuff going. So yeah, my CPA and I are whittling out all the different ways to make that work. And that's something we definitely have to get your CPA, consult with them how to do that. But ultimately, I'm trying to not own anything, but have the rights to use and direct everything, and then have my children involved and hold each other accountable when it comes to rents and the agreements that they signed and all that. So I don't have to be the asshole landlord. We have a family meeting once a month and they look at the books and see what came in and what went out. And they get to say, hey, how come you're not doing this? Or your lawn looks like this and your agreement was this. And they get to hold each other accountable. And then when I'm gone, they know how to run it. I'm not handing them a bunch of stuff just to piss away. There's also the death benefits from the life insurance policies. They'll go to the trust. So I'm trying to do the best I can to acquire everything I can, give them an opportunity to have ownership without quasi-ownership, right? And then the next generation to be able to do the same and the same and the same and the same. And it will continue to hopefully grow if they follow the pattern. If they fail to follow the pattern, I tried and I'm dead and I don't care.
That's true. So what are you buying right now? You buying single family? You buying multifamily? And
I'm buying single family. And I'm doing it in places where they would want to live for their work. So right now it's Missouri and Arizona. And I'm picking up stuff in Florida and a few other places. So I have real estate in 6 states. Sometimes I forget where it's all at.
So how do you decide where to buy out of state? What are your criteria?
It's kind of a hard criteria to really, really quantify for folks who say, well, how do you measure it, right? Sometimes there's a lot of gut that goes on to it, to figuring out what real estate you want. But it's, what can I keep reasonably rented for the entire time I own it, that I can raise rents on it? I'm going to get at least a 2.5% appreciation. If I can get that, those things, and somebody else is paying my mortgage, I don't care if I'm cash flowing today. A lot of these things will barely cash flow, maybe 50, 80, 100 bucks. But because I get to raise rents at least 3%, my cash flow will continue to compound because I'm raising rents on the gross amount of the rent, not on the cash flow. So gross amount goes up by 3%, my cash flow goes up by 50%. So it'll continue to compound. The other is, somebody's paying off my mortgage. If I got a $160,000 mortgage and they're paying that down over 30 years, that's equivalent to about $5,333 a year. Well, you divide that into my investment, which is the 20% down, that's growing by 10.6%. So just them paying down my mortgage means my investment, the money I put down plus costs, is going to grow by 10.6% every single year that they're paying down the mortgage. Now we average it over the mortgage term because of amortization tables. The other side of it, if it's that house that I bought for $200,000 is appreciating 2.5%, that's another $5,000. If I invested 50 into the down payment plus cost, that's another 10%. I'm making 20.6% of my money before I even get paid a dollar of cash flow. Now we get into the tax benefits that you have to work out with your CPA. So just looking at that alone, anybody says, well, I need the cash flow, well, then you're not doing very well if you need cash flow from your real estate to live right now. There's a lot of people that I talk to now say, hey, I'm 32 years old. I want to be able to retire in 5 years. I'm like, why? What are you going to do for society if you retire in five freaking years? I mean, you're running for Congress, right? I'm assuming you might be just close to the end of your 30s. So
thank you. You're very accurate, very close.
So you're doing something to make some changes. So there's amazing how many people want to say, well, I just want to be able to travel and do it. Great, you want to, but when you get there, you start realizing, I kind of like doing what I was doing. I enjoy being able to fuel this growth of my assets. And when the cash comes in, the cash doesn't matter at all. I actually like looking at the fact I got houses in 6 states, not cash flow. Cash flow is great, but cash flow goes away quickly. What I mean by quickly, it goes into something else. And also sitting in your bank account is not helping you at all either. Inflation's eroding that at 0.666% of its value every single month.
Don't use that many sixes in a row. We don't do 0.666.
Well, that is some mark of the beast shit, and I get it. Especially when you think about what we're dealing with in the world today. Look at some of the people we're seeing.
Currency. So when you're doing some hedging, are you hedging into gold or Bitcoin? Where are you looking at besides real estate?
So I do have some crypto. I do have precious metals. Where am I hedging? You truly want to know where I hedge? A lot of my hedge is in precious metals. It's copper jacketed lead. I think that is the most precious metal out there, because if you have a ton of gold and I have a ton of copper jacketed lead and the particular instrument to use it, who ends up with both, right?
I mean, this is entirely possible. The other good currency is also whiskey. Don't forget, whiskey is a wonderful currency as well.
I mean, you might want to store a few little pills away. I mean, you never know, right? All these things, those consumables that people will need in a rough situation are definitely great hedges to have. And yes, I have a ton of that too. Now, I'm not going to give out my address. The last thing I need is somebody coming and raiding my bottle closet.
I mean, let's be honest. The feds are probably watching this anyway, but they only like to come after people like us. That's good. So back to the conversation about setting your assets up. Your primary residence is also in your trust. So if somebody comes to you and they're tired of the risk of the stock market because they can see it's high, they know it's an artificial height, because we know the stock market, it's not on good fundamentals right now. None of our traditional fundamentals are in play. So they want to move over towards real estate. What is the first thing you tell them to do? What is their best advice for getting started in this pathway?
We want to look at what assets they have presently, liquid assets. And the first place I instruct them to go, or at least encourage them to go, is look at the infinite banking strategy. Look at those whole life policies. Get that started first. And the reason I say that is if you have money sitting in your bank account and you decide, oh, I'm going to go buy, take this, say $100,000, I'm going to go buy a couple of houses, I'm going to go invest my money there. Well, and then something happens to you the day after you buy the houses. You pass, your family now gets a house or two houses and an empty bank account. Now, what do they do? But if you take that $100,000, put into a life insurance policy, a whole life policy, able to borrow, say, $85,000 against it within that first 30 days. And if you guys can't get access to it in 30 days, and it's not whole life, you're talking to the wrong damn people. So connect with me on that. I'll hook you up with the right people. Then you get access to that money. You pull out. You still buy the houses. And then you pass. Now your family gets the houses and a death benefit. For me, it was $90,000 I purchased my first one with at a $2.7 million death benefit. I took $83,000 from it. Bought three houses. If I died, my family would have the three houses and their cash flow plus $2.7 million minus the $83,000 I borrowed against the policy. The other cool thing about that is it grows tax-free. And in most states, if somebody comes after you, they can't come after you for the money that the policy has value of, that cash accessibility, because technically it's a loan. That money's spent. It's gone. The only state that I'm aware of, there may be another, is California, that they can come after that. Well, the reason they can do it in California because they can tax you for breathing in that freaking state. So there's that. So that's where I have people start there. And if they feel confident in that, then they can start on their path. Then it's introducing them to operators in the country, multiple states, 3 to 4 states, that do a very good job of acquiring the property, either rehabbing it, building it, selling it to them, managing it, maintaining it. You need to create a business. I also really, really work on the mindset of the new investor. Quit thinking that you have the ability to do it all, or you're going to do it all. You think you're saving money by buying the house somehow, and then sleeping in it on weekends and working on it. And then you sell it, and then you end up selling for barely under market value. You had to drop a few things to make it work, and you lost more money than you gained because you're not a plumber. You're not a carpenter. You're definitely not a drywall guy, and you really, 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 really suck at electrical. And because of all that, you cost yourself thousands of dollars more than would have just hired the professionals to get it done overnight.
I'm only laughing because I have a client right now, and she is so sweet, and she's buying her first house to do a renovation on it. And she's not sure if they're going to keep it or sell it. And she and her boyfriend are doing all the work themselves. And I said, you're never going to finish this project because you both have full-time jobs and you don't know how to do this. And it's going to feel romantic for about the first weekend that you work on it. And then it's going to probably tear you apart. But she's young and idealistic. So she's going to find out, because sometimes you have to learn lessons the hard way. I mean, you and I have both made investment decisions in the past that, looking back on them, probably could have spent our money more wisely. But to add on to the people who do the work on the house, property manager, best money you will ever spend on the face of the planet. And you are not your best property manager because I don't care how financially focused you are. People get emotional about their real estate and you've got to have that property manager to take the emotion out. Woo!
100% correct. Find the right property management you can get along with it that will take care of your business for you. What I found as a property manager is that I was much better as accepting stories rather than checks, because every one of my tenants had a great story as to why they can't pay the rent. Right. And of course, I don't have the heart to tell them, get the hell out. So I found a guy that just loves that kind of thing. He loves hearing the story just so he can pick it apart. He's like an attorney. He'll sit there and take notes of what they're telling me. And then he's like, wait a minute, you contradict yourself. He just tears them apart. And he loved it. Unfortunately, we lost him to COVID. He was a really, really good guy.
Well, so he was kind of like a claims adjuster then, because claims adjusters are good at that too. You have to be investigatory, but you're thinking about this. It's not just the emotion of the tenant. It's your investment money. It's your financial future. And too many investors get completely sideways from that. They start falling in love with the house and forget that represents your actual hard-earned dollars. And back to your point about the 30-year-old that wants to retire, they've forgotten that the dollars represent productivity. And so if you're actually productive in life and you've built up a business, why would you let somebody else run it into the ground? So stop it. But it's a great way to think about the future. So let's go back to the idea that the institutional investors were buying up 44% this past year. I think that's accurate. Their earliest prognostications were that they were looking to own 30% of the housing stock in the U.S., but they've gone past that because these are great returns. And also, the citizens are a lot less fussy when they are tenants. And you find this every time. Property owners are the ones that will take care of their families. They're the ones that take care of their communities because they're vested in it. Tenants aren't vested in a community. And you can argue with me in the comments all you want. I love my tenants. But they're not going to show up at school board meetings. They're not going to fuss with county commission. They're not going to make sure that the trash is picked up because they aren't tied to it. They can walk away. And when the populace is primarily not tied to what they own, they will walk away. And then the elites can further consolidate their power. And I look at this from the community standpoint. And as a property owner, there is something so amazing that you feel when you buy a house for the first time, and then you get to paint the bedrooms, you get to plant your garden, you get to really get a taste of self-sufficiency. And that's being eroded. And I don't really know what the best solution is in our communities to stop the hedge funds from buying. I mean, here in Charlotte, we've estimated that they own about 30% of the housing stock already because they were buying up here during the recession. The banks were selling portfolios of foreclosures to them. And what most people in the public don't know is that the foreclosure default rate is as high as it was during the Great Recession. You're just not seeing them on the market because a lot of them have equity. Well, the banks want to keep the equity. So they take the house back and then they're reselling it off market to the institutional investors. And so there's a, I almost call it a shadow market going on. And to your point, that's the main reason you should be buying right now. While you have a chance, buy and dig your stake into the ground so you can learn how to fight back against the policies that are not designed to help the average everyday person.
So you see, what do we do to combat this is buy and educate and educate and educate. Twice a week, I've got my YouTube channel. I put out what's going on in the market, show the charts, show what's happening in the mortgage-backed securities, and encourage them, buy the damn real estate. The only way that we're going to stop the control of everything being taken from us and forcing us into this subscription-based economy is to own everything you can. And if it's just one, then it's one. Then you did your part. Not everybody has to go up to the Capitol and storm the Capitol, right? What you can do is take one chunk of property in your part of the world and take ownership of that and direct it from a personal level. That right there, to me, is taking the country back and taking control of our country. Now, the difficulty I have here is getting everybody to freaking listen. They just don't. When you hear from brand new investors how they want to tell me what it is to be an investor and what they need to hear from you. I was like, dude, I've been doing this since 97. I have over 1,000 clients a year that are successful in real estate investing. You've never bought a house.
It's a TikTok, Aaron. They saw a TikTok that told them how to be amazing.
You know, what's also funny about the TikToks, you talk about the mortgage guys, the TikTok mortgage guys that are out there right now. There's a lot of them that are amazing, these top producers, like buy my system to become a top producer. Why don't you just do your damn system if it works so freaking well and just keep doing your job? Right? What is this whole buy my system shit? For me, it's like, how do I help my real estate investor become better at what they are, more confident, and go into these things and realize that it doesn't matter if the rates go down, it doesn't matter if they go up, own the damn real estate.
Exactly. And that means if you're looking at rates, and if you're watching this and you're a real estate pro, stop telling people about refinance. It may or may not happen. You need to not tie your fortunes to that. talk to people about the payment and what they can buy right now. If they can handle the payment, don't worry about the rate. We're totally focused on the wrong things. And then you think about the place that rates have been. There's a perception issue only because the Fed artificially lowered rates from 2008 to 2022. 3% was not normal. That was bought and paid for by the government. Now we've moved into more of a normal space, but we have an entire generation that got spoiled. You just have to talk people through that, because if you're in real estate and you're watching this, how many people did you talk to in 2019, 2020, 2021, who looking back are so mad at themselves for not buying? You have got list and list of people who wish they had, which means your opportunity right now is to say, quit thinking you wish you had and just do it. Live with it and then figure it out. My first house was 11.75% interest because I was self-employed. I was going to get a really high rate and the rates were higher then anyway. I didn't care. The payment worked. And so I sucked it up and got started in my real estate journey. And that very first house, when I sold it two years ago, I turned it into an eightplex doing a 1031. And so if you don't get started, you're never going to take those next steps. It's just wild to me how many people are controlled by the media, which says prices are going to crash. They're not likely to crash. Their interest rates are going to come down. I think they're likely to come down, but it's not going to be back to the 3% level. We should always remember, too, the Fed has already broadcast 3 rate cuts. So Wall Street's baked it in. But also, they are going to protect the incumbent. That is the nature of the Fed. Jerome Powell does not want to lose his cushy little job. So they are going to work to protect the incumbent. Now, you need to be a little agnostic about that. And whether you like it or not, just realize that's what's going on. So talk to your client base, talk to your investor base and say, if rates do come down second quarter, if they make any rate cuts, don't let the moss grow on you. Get busy and buy something, no matter what it is. Won't be perfect, just buy it.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime while also managing sky-high fuel cost at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now, and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link, www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content.
Thing is, baked in those rate cuts, you're talking about those 3 rate cuts, but we have enough people. The New York Fed president just came out and said, hey, we're thinking more, it should be wait till we hit the 2% target before they drop the interest rates, right? So now all of a sudden, you'd be like, wait a minute, are they really going to drop it? They may not drop it. So there's a lot of trepidation. I've got some friends that actually work for the Fed. They're saying, we don't know if that's really what's going to happen. So it's...
They will. They'll do it to protect Biden.
They're going to do it to protect their job, like you said. I mean, protect Biden, there's no protecting that. He's 100% protected. That's the only reason he's even in there. But speaking of rates, do I have the capability to share screen here? Let's take a look at this. Yep, looks like I do.
I do have capability for you.
Yep, you trusted me. All right, so here's what we got here. Showing you the mortgage-backed securities. This is what I'm looking at as the 5.5 coupons. I do a lot of investor deals, and we're doing things what they call forward commitments, which is buying down rates in advance of the sale of the house, where I'm getting people interest rates way in the fives, actually. So that's happening right now. What I'm showing you here is the history of the mortgage-backed security. And we've got some lines here to evidence a few things. So I'm going to go all the way back to as far as I can see, which will take us all the way back to 2008. So I drew this yellow line right here. This 100.53 is what this yellow line represents. And what that represents is right here, this point here, where everything went up and it stayed up above this second line, the yellow line. That was the day the Fed announced quantitative easing. That was November 25th, 2008. When they announced quantitative easing, the entire market jumped into it and they stayed in it. And the Fed stayed in. Now, the Fed started their investing. This is where the Fed started investing, is right here where this orange line is. So look at this jump here. From here to here, this is all the market jumping in before the Fed started putting their money in. January 1st, 2009, they started investing capital from the U.S. Treasury through the Fed. And that's what drove all this market it to this, these levels way up here. So what this is an inverse on interest rates. The higher this goes, the lower the interest rates go. This means money flowing in, it's like supply and demand. The higher the supply, the lower the price, right? If you got a low supply, high demand, extremely high price. So what we show here is now you get to October 2021, they announced quantitative tightening, meaning we're not going to keep putting money into the markets. Look what happened. Fell off a freaking cliff and it kept going. Now it went to its lowest point that we saw, which was October of this year. I'm going to zoom back in. So we get to that point where it bottomed out October 23rd. That was the lowest that we had seen, meaning the highest interest we had seen since 1996. And it started crawling back up. Now, what I find interesting is I kept telling everybody over a year ago, watch this 100.53 line. That was the line established before the Fed announced quantitative easing. That's the highest that the market would go into this security. That's the highest that they would flow into it before the Fed just said, hey, we're going to do this. Look what it did. It rocketed all the way up. Bam, hit that line. Tried to hit it again, kept hitting, never could get above that line. Nobody's talking about this line. There's not a single person out there that talks about the bonds, that talks about mortgages, that talks about, hey, what's going to drive interest rates? We're going to watch for this report to come out. Nobody's talked about the line that was established in 2008. I'm the only son of a bitch bringing it up. For some reason, I'm still not heard that the reason I don't think rates are getting down is because it's already been established what the market's willing to give who is not involved. The Fed's not involved right now. They're not doing quantitative easing right now. So since they're not, that's where we're going to be held. In fact, I should go back to the share screen real quick. And if people sit here and keep jerking off and not looking at what's going on in the market, we could see this fall to this point. If you got an interest rate quoted to you today, and right now is where our market sits, and if you keep holding, hopefully it's going to get better, there's nothing below us except for one trend line that's going to stop or hit this other Fibonacci level. That means you're going to see and the points for this go up about 0.5% in cost because you're sitting there waiting. If you're sitting there floating right now because your lender says, we may see it get better, it's not going to get that much better. You're risking it either costing you more or slightly getting better on your price, but we have things stopping it from getting better right above where we currently sit. So I keep encouraging people, quit waiting on the damn rates. You're risking a lot more upward movement than you are downward movement because we've shown the ceiling. The ceiling has held since December 14th. I should know that off the top of my head, but December 14th, and we have not been able to get past or at least get convincingly lower interest rates since December 14th.
There is a guy on Twitter that's right here with you. I'll have to find his handle and send it to you. I found him through Zero Hedge of Wall Street Silver, and he's frustrated in the same way. So let me ask you a question. A friend of mine that is involved in the swamp in DC had told me that there is some concern with the MBSs right now because the underlying appraisals may be faulty simply because in the run-up during COVID, you had a lot of numbers that people were just, like you said, pay $100,000 over ask. And it was, let's see what happens. And the appraisers didn't have good information because the market was rocketing up. So they signed off on it without good data underneath it. So now there's some questions about the MBS. And that's one of the things that we keep being told by the hive mind, that there's nothing wrong with the markets. The tranches from 2007, that was a different era, except we have a different underlying issue now. Do you think that's part of what's affecting that ceiling, keeping it from breaking through?
Personally, I don't believe that that's what's doing it, just because anybody who's been trading any length of time in the MBSs, they know where these values are at. And there could be some validity to that because we don't know what the real values of these houses are. Just because somebody was able to, you spurred buying by with fear, doesn't actually give something value. What you're doing is you're pushing up a price, not actually giving it a proper value. So it could have some sort of play in that. But I find it very, very interesting that there's that factor, but everything's tying right back to the valuation of this asset, this security, prior to public money going into it. When you take out the Fed's involvement, you take out government involvement, that's the highest price we saw. That was the price that was set. And the fact that it keeps hitting that, I was taking a long shot. I was literally closing my eyes and throwing the freaking football and hoping that I got into the end zone with that. And it hit. It took me a year to find out that it hit, but it hit. And it did exactly what I predicted it would. Now, I questioned the underlying value of the assets because of what happened with real estate, because everybody driving in and pushing it up the way that they did. There is a good chance that we are heavily overvalued. But we're also, the one thing that I think that prevents us from really having a big hit to that is we are also way low on inventory.
Exactly.
Demand is huge. Inventory is low, just like we just illustrated with this. That's that whole economics 101, supply and demand. I don't know that we're going to realize that decline that we should because inventories have been so low. The other fact is when people have an opportunity to buy and they want to buy, they are still going to be a little bit of a battle on that home because there's so few homes available since the hedge funds are taken. Plus, how many people have a 2% interest rate? They're not going to sell their house. They've been given those handcuffs. That is also putting constraints on the market. So he's right. We don't know what the real value is, but we also know there's not enough out there on the market to adjust the value. The other thing that I believe has become a real difficulty in the value of real estate has to do with the fact that appraisers are being forced to use the MLS as a sole form of understanding what the market's doing. Well, it had to be in the open market. Well, what's the open market? The open market is anybody who wants to buy a damn house. They're limiting the people who want to sell it privately or sell it to their database or sell it on the internet to you have to run it through the MLS for it to count as a comp. Why? It gets down to the National Association of Realtors is the strongest lobbying group on the planet. There is nobody stronger, nobody spends more money than the National Association of Realtors. That's why my personal belief is what's kept them in the position with the MLS being the go-to place for values of real estate, not realizing the value of real estate is adjusting out there in a lot more ways than just the MLS. So that's also making it difficult to really figure out the true value of real estate because they're only using one place to determine where it's coming from. The other thing is if NAR is that damn strong, you need to get involved in some of this other shit and start slugging it out on other things that are much more important to people.
Well, there would have to be a different kind of focus at the National Association of Realtors. And I think that they've got other things to put in the fire right now besides these things, which leaves it to people like you and me to bring the word out there. And I just got to add in one thing because it's driving me completely crazy right now. Every time we talk about the low level of supply and the lack of inventory in the market, there is a complete and utter silence on behalf of realtors, lenders, economists, everybody else to talk about the demand issue, which has been wildly exacerbated by the open borders and somewhere between 8 and 11 million people in this country. We have to actually, again, be agnostic about it and say, those are people that are taking up apartments, houses, they're taking up living spaces, which is also exacerbating the issue. And I asked the question of a lobbyist friend of mine. I said, why aren't we talking about this? And they said, it's an untouchable subject. And I said, that's crazy to me that you're so political about wanting to destroy this country that you can't even look at it from the standpoint of if people are coming here and they're living somewhere, this is part of the factors in the market. And that's also why I don't think we're going to see any great crash, because unless you figure out how to deport 11 million people, which I think is the only answer, but I don't know how you logistically do it, or start building at great numbers, which is not going to happen because we have so many anti-growth, anti-building local elected officials now. I think we're in for quite an era of stasis because nobody's budging and it's fascinating to watch. But as you said, individuals can budge and buy something and get your stake in the ground.
Only thing that we can do, because like you said, they're not even talking about that. And that's a solid, solid point. Look at where they're placing them. You got schools that are being taken over. You got police stations being taken over. You got terminals of airports being sectioned off to house people. I don't even know what the plan is.
Oh, yeah, you do. The plan is, if you look at what the college professors have been saying, they call us a bunch of colonizers. They just want this country destroyed. And I don't know that they realize they're doing all that from their devices, from their nice, warm, air-conditioned spaces, because we have gotten so comfortable and complacent as a country. Our people have forgotten that you're supposed to work hard to protect and preserve what you've built instead of destroying it for your own hubris and narcissism. It's all narcissism.
What realizes that all comes back to you. I mean, it literally, all that is going to land on your doorstep. It's actually doing it to them right now. All the people in New York or wherever else say, you guys were all for this. Guess what? You get to deal with it now. We're going to push it all your directions.
It's come in here into my county, and we're in Cabarrus County, North Carolina. And we know to get dropped off outside a specific food line, working men, working age men, they're somewhere in the 20s and 30s is the guess. And then they just kind of vanish. Police can't do anything because they haven't done anything. But we don't know where they're going. Is it safe houses? Is it apartments? They're just into the community somewhere. So we don't have any way as citizens to know. And they might be great people that are here to get a job and work, but they also might be terrorists because that's been coming over the line too. And so it's just kind of a wild time that I think citizens need to decide they're tired of this.
It's an absolutely insane time. We don't know what the outcome is going to be, but there's no way the outcome is going to be good. Okay. It's going to continue to compound. It's going to get ugly. It's going to get nasty. And I have no idea how it's going to land. All I can say is get good, close associations of people you trust and make sure you guys are ready for whatever. Spitball what it could be. I mean, you guys have been watching Walking Dead. You know what it is to be prepared for zombie apocalypse. Get the shit that they've got, right?
I can't watch that show. I let my husband watch it because it's too stressful for me. But there are some excellent people to follow on Twitter that have great insights and details and information to give.
100%. I definitely think that people need to get wrap their head around that. But
we totally went down a rabbit hole. What are you going to ask?
I've got to ask. You got a lot of listeners. And if they're listening to you, they're probably some cool ass people. So I've got a book that I've got written that I need to get edited.
What?
And I'll show you. It's got some amazing artwork in it. I'm going to show you the artwork. This is just for the forward. Now, Robert Allen, you know Robert Allen? No Money
That's
Down.
Beautiful.
Robert Allen wrote the forward. And so this is just the artwork for the forward. There's 13 chapters. Every chapter has a work of art like this on the chapter.
I would buy it for that artwork. That is stunning.
So I did the book. Robert read it. He's like, you need to have somebody to illustrate this. I'm like, how? He goes, I don't know. Find an artist and have him figure it out. Had my brother read it. And he goes, I've got an idea, but it's expensive. I'm like, just do it. And he did. And they're all big pieces of art. And I'll just show you all of them. Why the hell not?
You're a tease, Aaron Chapman.
Oh, you have no idea how bad it gets. So here's the 13 pieces of art. I have to scroll through my email for you to be able to see them. Each one of these tells the story of the chapter. You got to read the chapter to go back to see it. Now, this is the part you'll love. You got the steel chainsaw. You got the chainsaw chain border right here.
The proof that it's not a Husqvarna is that they're all cheering for it to make its way through the tree. It has not actually done the job.
Actually, I know. I think it's because it's still running. Is the reason it's not. So every one of these illustrates what the story is, and you have to go back and look at it. Kind of makes it a little bit fun. But the reason I need help on all this, and there's where it all ends, is because I've got editors who looked at it, and they keep insisting that they want to edit it to a normal reading format. I'm like, no, this is not written by a normal guy. This is written by me, and I wrote it the way I talk. I didn't write it the way I wrote. I have other books that are published, but
that's
they're written very clearly.
They're all in my voice. I talked. And then we just fixed the grammar and stopped all the run-on sentences, but it's just me talking. It works.
You know, we end up taking the G's off of stuff because I don't enunciate the G when I'm talking, and it's that kind of thing. So it makes it harder to read, but a person actually has to read. You can't skim my book. So I'm looking for an editor, a person who'll do the setting off the professional people have the balls to do my stuff. These other guys, they said they won't do it because their name's going on. I'm like, well, are you kidding me, some bitch? You don't have the kind of balls to get in here to do something. I'll even write it up. In the intro, I actually called a warning on the intro instead of an intro that I found somebody with the balls to actually edit this thing the way I wanted it done. And I'll give them kudos. I'm just looking for somebody who's got some guts.
Well, my Michelle, I know, will be listening to this and she can connect you to the guy who helped us with book number three. The first two I did with the company and the third one I did with an independent editor. And something tells me he's probably delightfully going to go along with it because he could manage me, so he could probably manage you. But this is why I self-published. I couldn't go by anybody else's rules. And you know what? They all wound up being bestsellers anyway. So
I'll shoot you the forward, take a look at too, and see what you think. But I want to come back on to promote it when it's ready to publish. Because my goal is to hit 100 podcasts when it comes time to publish.
I'll do a cover quote for you or a back of the cover quote. I'll hook you up. I'll say something nice about your book.
Yeah.
We'll cross-promote.
I couldn't ask for more. But definitely, I'm going to hit 100 podcasts to see if people will stockpile these to release them the day the book releases, and then do another 100 after it goes out.
Oh, my friend George Wanica would love you on his show. He's the Gripe podcast. He's a fuss budget. He's wonderful. Dustin Braum, I know, would love to have you. What is Wanica's podcast called? Oh, yeah, the Gripe Session. He's up in Staten Island. He's a hot mess. Your people. George Wanica Jr., the Gripe Session.
Gripe Session. Okay.
Staten Island people are a special breed anyway. So you who are listening to this wonderful conversation, you should probably go follow George Wanica Jr. too. And George Wanica Sr. is amazing, but he's not exactly on social media since he is the elder statesman of the Wanica family. But the Gripe Session is not afraid to push buttons. So obviously, right up your alley. He used to volunteer at the National Association a lot, but he pulled back because he's so frustrated by the politics inside. So he'll go down that rabbit hole with you too.
Politics to me, amazingly enough, what happened to right and wrong? It all happened in our lifetime. I was born in 1974. From 1974 to now, everything flipped so ridiculously. I don't know how right and wrong went away so quickly. Everything before that period, it was all the same. Now, all of a sudden, gone to this lunacy. I would really, 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 really like to just go back to the damn rotary phone with no voicemail, but Bluetooth, because I don't want that 70-foot cord walking around the damn house, right? Bluetooth with my rotary phone. I want that. I'm so tired of the overwhelming communication to us all the time.
Well, these things are the biggest poison ever introduced into society. Absolutely. And we are the last generation of straddle people. So we'll have to fix it ourselves, I guess. But, you know, this is our big birthday year because I'm a 74 baby, too. So we may as well accomplish some big things this year, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're accomplishing big things. Congratulations on going there and slugging out some bitches in the swamp. I am here to back you up any way I possibly can. You need a man in black to walk around and talk some shit, I'm your guy.
Well, don't be surprised when I win if I call you up and say, hey, I need somebody to come help me out, because I will have the most unconventional staff ever.
Take that call all day long. And actually, honestly, that's what we're looking at the title of this book, Unconventional.
Have to be. That's how we fix everything, is not with ugliness, and it's not that you have to burn everything down, but you sure better come up with an unconventional answer, because the way we've been doing it is broken. Aaron Chapman, where can people find you if they're looking for you in the interwebs?
So you definitely just go to aaronchapman.com. But hey, guys, you want to talk about real estate and how to get going in it and not get jerked off? Just text me, 602-291-3357, 602-291-3357. There, I'm the only guy out there who can put my damn cell phone out there for you to text me, and Bree will set up a half hour conversation, 602-291-3357. I appreciate you, Lee. I'm here to back you up in whatever, and I can't wait to get to hang out with you in the future.
I appreciate you too. And you guys, I can actually attest to Aaron and his team, because they run all of my investments. And so we are able to work together. They do a great professional job, and you will not be disappointed. So there's this little extra commercial. But in the meantime, subscribe for more. Go back to the first episode Aaron was on to find out more about him. And most importantly, come back and see us on Crazy Shit. And hopefully when you come back, you'll see an elected congresswoman.
As always, I am so super thrilled that you joined in for more Crazy Shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.